We don't need to see anything out of the ordinary. We already see so much.
This is episode 534 on the Hidden Wire podcast with Roman Muradov. G'day and welcome back to another episode of the Hidden Wire podcast. How the heck are ya? My name is Lee McNulty, the host of the show. Guys, thank you for taking the time out to tune in. I hope you're well. I hope you're very well. Guys, today I have a cracker of an interview to bring you, and it is with Roman Muradov. So Roman is an award-winning author and illustrator living in San Francisco. And it hasn't always been that way. About 10 years ago, he jumped ship, and he was a petroleum engineer at the time, and he decided he wanted to pursue a career as an artist. And that's what he's done. He's designed a lifestyle and successfully become a well-known artist. His work has appeared in The New Yorker, The New York Times, The Paris Review, Vogue, and Lucky Peach, among others. He's designed books for the likes of Penguin Random House, and he's won a few medals as well. So check out his full bio at thehiddenwire.com if you're interested. He's also got an imaginary dog named Barchild, or Barchibald, I think it is. So yeah, interesting dude, and really unique perspectives that I just really enjoyed talking to him about. We discuss in this interview, really, his new book, which is called On Doing Nothing, Finding Inspiration in Idleness. So we discuss the likes of expression, creativity, and meaning, and how they all interrelate and interconnect. I share my views, and he shares his opinions as well on those topics. Certainly, I believe we all have a creative flair, and our ability to express ourselves authentically is really necessary in living a meaningful life. That's my perspective. And so we chat about that together in this episode as well. So yeah, expression, creativity. And then we talk about his book as well, like On Doing Nothing, and how just by doing nothing, we can actually be more creative. We can generate better ideas and perhaps even become a little bit more effective by slowing down. So rather than speeding up and being so distracted, slowing down, removing the distractions, perhaps we can tap into that inner creativity that is in all of us, I believe. So anyway, it's a great episode, guys. I hope you enjoy it. Let me know what you think. You can jump onto thehiddenwire.com. This is episode 534, would you believe it? And so jump onto thehiddenwire.com. Leave your comments there. You can reach me directly if you have any feedback for myself, or you can reach Roman as well through the links in the show notes as well. He'd love to hear from you, I'm sure. So reach out to us, guys. Let us know what you think. If you love the episode, if you think anyone that you know might like it, please share it out for us. There's a bunch of social media links there, so you can share it out to any of your favorite social media channels. That would be great. And guys, you can also leave us a review on iTunes if you wish to and haven't already yet. That helps us feature higher in the ranks as well. Other than that, guys, just connect with us. Let me know what you think. Give me any feedback that you've got, and we'll speak at the other end. Thank you for tuning in. Hey, Roman. Welcome to the Hidden Wire podcast.
Hello. Thank you.
Is it Roman or Roman?
Whatever you like, Roman, it's fine for me.
I like that casual approach. Yeah. I want to get it right, but it's important. So, Roman, mm-hmm. Thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate you taking up my invite and speaking to me. I did reach out to you because you've got a new book coming out, which is titled On Doing Nothing, Finding Inspiration in Idleness, which for the audience out there, and I think this is still the case, correct me if I'm wrong, is due to be launched on April the 24th this year. So,
That's right.
Next year as we record this, but yeah, 2018. Mm-hmm. So pretty soon, yeah. It sounds like an interesting read, and that's why I wanted to reach out to you and talk to you about it. But before we get into that, just tell us a little bit about yourself, mate. What do you do? Where are you in this world? What brings you excitement to your life?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was born in Baku, and I grew up mainly in Russia. And sometime around 2008, I moved to San Francisco, where I still live.
Okay.
My first degree was in petroleum engineering, and then after I worked for a little bit, I kind of decided to do a very drastic switch, and I decided to become an artist. So I tried many different things, and I mainly known for my editorial work and book illustrations, and I've also written several short novellas of my own that are illustrated, like somewhere like graphic novels and things like that. And this is actually my first nonfiction book.
Yeah, right, cool. Yeah, I sort of picked that up. You got a fair few works online there, I noticed, on your website.
Yeah, I've done covers for James Joyce's Centennial Editions for Penguin, and I often contribute to New York Times and The New Yorker, so this is probably what I'm most known for.
Right. How long have you been doing this for?
I guess about a decade or so.
Wow. How does one go from petroleum engineering to becoming an artist? Like, it sounds like, as you said,
with considerable difficulty. it wasn't easy. But
have you always been an artist? Have you always been, like, as a child, a teenager, drawing, you know, in art class?
No. People do get surprised about that. But I never really drew much as a teenager. So, in a way, it was kind of a wild shift for me. And I just thought, well, I might as well try this. But I think it also helped me to get a slightly unusual perspective on things. In a way, I kind of appreciated the whole drawing for a living concept much better. You know, having done something quite dull for most of my adult life.
Right. I mean, it sounds so dramatic. Can you sort of describe to us what made you think that art was the path forward? I mean, it sounds like perhaps you just felt that your last career was a little bit dull and unexciting and perhaps didn't use your creative flair, but what was it? Why art? Why not something else? Why not, I don't know, baking bread or something?
Baking? Well, I would love to bake. It sounds a little more complicated than drawing, to be honest.
Oh, really? Not for me. I'm really, you know, I think we can all draw, but I don't rate my drawing by any stretch of the imagination.
Are you good at baking?
I can cook. I don't know about baking. I'm okay, right. I guess. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, baking is complicated. Oh, sorry, I heard. A little bit anyway. So I think, I've always been interested in languages and literature, but the whole idea of becoming a writer out of nowhere seemed quite daunting. And I thought, well, how do you make people read your work? I don't know. But it's much easier to make them look at your pictures. You just show something and it's there. So it was a pretty pragmatic concern. I thought, well, I can get my ideas to people in a more immediate medium. And that probably sounds a little crazy, but in a way that worked for me. And so eventually I kind of went back to writing, and then these two disciplines merged.
Yeah,
right. I started doing books that have both pictures and words working together.
So it sounds like it was somewhat planned in your vision
it wasn't planned at all. So it was really stumbling in the dark. But
as far as you wanted you sort of had the idea to draw pictures rather than go straight into writing, because I'm a writer, and that's where I've sort of gone straight into. I'm still starting out, really, and trying to learn the art in a great sense. But it sounds like you had a slight plan to sort of get the art out there because you thought people would be able to see.
Yeah, there's
you.
Also the language question. The thing is, I've never really written anything in Russian, which is my first language.
Right.
And when I went to America, I knew English a bit, but certainly not to the extent that I could write a book in it.
Right.
And so there was this feeling that I had something to say, but I couldn't find the medium for it. So doing visual work was also an escape from that conundrum. So then eventually when I became better at English, it seemed natural to try that out. And for me, English has always been a language of writing. So there's a bit of a separation. Of course, I do use it to buy soup or things like that, but it's also kind of elevated in a way. So for me, Russian is the language that I used to speak to my parents, and it's the language of the first half of my life. And then English is a more artistic, more special thing for me, I suppose.
Okay. Well, mate, I'm impressed, and I think a lot of people listening out there would be as well. I know, and the reason why I sort of delve into that and interested in that is because I feel that a lot of us are trapped in careers and paths that perhaps don't bring us that great joy, and perhaps have this curiosity to explore other things, and maybe a little bit fearful of taking that drastic leap as you did. So I guess there's inspiration in what you've done, and hopefully that
can inspire others. Yeah, well, don't get me wrong. I have nothing but respect for people who have proper careers and normal jobs. It's just that it really wasn't for me. I think I didn't fit in particularly well in that environment.
So yeah.
That was not, yeah.
Myself included. I mean, yeah, if you love what you're doing, whatever you're doing, I have absolute respect
absolutely.
For that.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Where I have the problem is when we get stuck in things doing that we don't want, and perhaps there's something burning inside us that we really want to pursue, but just, you know, maybe don't have the courage to go out there like you did and do it. And I don't know if you had courage to do it, but it's
well, I had something.
Sounded like a big move, yeah, so... plus, you're in a different country with a language barrier as well. So,
yeah, I do believe in the necessity of an artistic exile. You know, it's what Joyce wrote about: silence, exile, and cunning. You have to have those three at your disposal as an artist to do anything. So it was kind of a way of just getting away from a comfortable environment, getting away from my parents who. You know, fed me and putting myself in circumstances that felt uncomfortable. I think that sense of discomfort is really important for finding any artistic voice.
Okay, what did you say? You think it's important to have exile, and you mentioned two others, exile?
Silence and cunning. Oh, it's from the portrait of the artist as a young man. But
exile, silence, think, and cunning, did you say?
Cunning, yes. I suppose you can translate it as a certain inventiveness of spirit, playfulness.
Oh, okay. Right. I'm with you. Yeah, well, that's very interesting. I guess that sort of forms a little bit about what your book's about, I assume, without having read it yet.
Yes, in a way, I suppose. Joyce is certainly prominent there, as he was a great idler. And, as I went along in my artistic career, I changed quite a lot. And... I worked pretty hard to kind of develop a set of skills. So I became very good at drawing with brush and ink and doing this very kind of perfect, beautiful drawings that eventually kind of stopped giving me any satisfaction at all. So at some point I stopped drawing altogether, and I went to the library and I started reading like crazy. And I discovered all this world of Lipo, the French writing group that used constraints to kind of get away from the idea of inspiration.
Mm.
And I became a really dedicated reader fairly late-ish in my youth, I suppose. So I wasn't a big bookworm when I was growing up, but I guess in my mid-20s I started reading properly.
Yeah.
And... So all these ideas like really started to transform the way I approach art and my own practice and the way I appreciate art as well. And I realized that if they have something in common, it's this idea of not making art in order to make art. And so these ideas have been brewing in my head for the last half a decade or so. And eventually I started teaching, and I would try to help a lot of my students who... like many Americans of our generation, kind of work a little too hard, and they can get a bit stuck in that routine of just perfecting their skills, and they sort of lose what makes it interesting in the first place. And as I went along making notes and drafts and whatnot, it more or less developed into a more coherent vision. And at some point, I was invited to do a lecture at an illustration conference. And I really didn't want to go on about myself and just talk about my achievements and whatever, because, I don't know, it's not really interesting for me to go out and brag about it.
Fair enough.
And I feel always a little uncomfortable sort of listing my awards and things. So I thought I would do a lecture about idleness and how important it is to not do art in order to make art. So I did that, and an editor from Chronicle Books was in attendance, and she asked me to turn that into a book. But again, I didn't feel like just transcribing the lecture and adding a few nice pictures. So I kind of started rewriting everything, and I increased it quite a lot. It amounted, after all the edits, to 20,000 words. Then I cut quite a lot out of that. So it turned into this very concise book that I think is very accessible, very readable, but at the same time it has kind of the sum and the wealth of all that knowledge that I've been accumulating through all my reading and research I think it's, if I can describe it in a few words, it's like having a conversation with someone who has sort of gone through a lot of books and can give you a little rundown of all the different ideas and tricks and techniques that they contain, and then you can use that to maybe go and either just use these ideas or maybe read these books and examine those artists and practitioners, learn something from them, and take these ideas somewhere else.
Right. So you can take away a lot of ideas from your book and hopefully incorporate them into your own art.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what reading's all about, I guess, you know, looking at other perspectives and ideas and taking away what the knowledge
yeah,
is.
Yeah, but at the same time, I was really adamant about it not being a book just for artists.
Yeah.
And I do believe that one point that I often press in that book is that there is not a great deal of separation between art and life.
Yeah.
And I think we can approach common everyday things with a degree of artistry that makes them interesting. So, for instance, one of my heroes, George Perec, he has a little essay about the practice of arranging your books on a bookshelf. And the poet Mary Ruffel has something like that. She suggests, why not arrange them by color? You know. So this is not what you would commonly think of as an artistic practice.
Yeah.
But it also doesn't have to be, just to have bits of that artistry in your life and enjoy it.
Yeah, and this is perhaps where we can start the conversation. I have a map that I've illustrated based on how to live a ultimate life and how to live a happy life. And one of the fundamental needs, I believe, of all of us is a real ability to express ourselves. And I think that has a close connectivity to our innate creative flair. And I believe we are all creative beings. And that's perhaps what separates us from other sentient beings, is our ability to create. And perhaps some
I think cats are pretty creative in their own ways.
Yeah, there you go. Well, elaborate on that. How do you see that?
Well, I don't know. I certainly aspire to be a cat in my life. I don't think I can, but,
maybe in the
one
next
can
life.
Try. Yeah, but there is an anecdote, actually, I do relate in the book. Well, there's several about cats. Again, Perec wrote something like, there's really no other being that is so good at kind of adapting to the most inhospitable environments that a common household cat, because they're really good at finding a cozy corner no matter what room you put them in.
Yeah.
So I think there is a lot we can learn from cats. And you know, there's this story of a cat walking on one of Paul Klee's paintings. And there's an art collector in the room who related this story, which is, you know, apocryphal, so it may not be true, but who cares? And he said something like, oh dear, the cat is going over your paintings, let's stop it. And Paul Klee said, no, just let it go. Then years later, all your art critics will wonder how I made those marks. And so it's the idea of kind of allowing accidents to happen and being a little less deliberate with your life.
Being open, going over or vulnerable to your art rather than having it to be perfect.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's certainly a way of putting it.
What is your... How do you define creativity and do you feel that expression, individual expression, is important?
Yes and no. I think we live in a time of kind of rampant individualism, and we're all led to believe that we're great in some way or another.
Yeah.
And I think that puts maybe a little too much pressure on us. So personally, I think there's really no distinction between someone who maybe arranges plants in the corner of their room and it gives them satisfaction, and someone who wins the Nobel Prize in literature.
Yeah.
And that's kind of one of the points I'm trying to make, that...
Well, that's all expression,
We put these arbitrary ideas of success and failure, but really, if there's anything I did learn from kind of going from being an average engineer to being a fairly renowned illustrator and artist, is that well, nothing much changes, you know, unless you kind of delude yourself into thinking that now you're great.
Yeah. So the whole idea of expression, but no, I do agree, like we have this sort of big me mentality. But I often feel that we have this pressure on ourselves to express ourselves in an unauthentic way, rather than really just being ourselves and allowing our natural expression come through, you know, allowing, you know, if we like to arrange plants, then doing that rather than feeling like we have to do something else and sort of avoid that because it's just seen as wasteful time or perhaps it's not, you know, agreed with by others in your environment.
Well, here's the thing. It's impossible to not express yourself.
Yeah.
Like, if you take someone else's drawing and you copy it, you're going to express yourself by failing to copy it. So in a way, the whole pursuit of authenticity is really a kind of late humanist construct that is pretty meaningless. You know, in a way, there's so many practitioners in art and literature and whatever that started by simply copying things. And I'm certainly no exception. You know, there are all the stories of people writing an entire novel out by hand, simply to understand how that works. And, of course, there's that famous Borges story that I do bring up about Pierre Menard, who accidentally wrote Don Quixote, just the same thing, but he did it in a different century. And so his Don Quixote is much more deep and impactful than the original one because more time has passed between them.
Yeah.
So I kind of like to think of us artists or whatnot as this kind of vessels that simply transmit these clusters of information, and in our own way human illusions we like to think of us as creators, but really we're just transcribing things.
So we're just taking information that we see, that we come across from our environment, and we're just putting it out there in our own
method. Yeah, I mean, everything that comes out of my mouth right now is just a sum of my experiences that seems to arrange himself in some semblance of a meaning.
I absolutely agree. Yeah.
To a cat, it would probably not mean that much.
yeah, and look, my work's the same, you know. Everything, I do a lot of personal development stuff, and so a lot of the stuff I read, because I read a lot of books and listen to a lot of podcasts, etc., it's really just information that I've heard or come across and sort of reassembled together, glued together in a mishmash sort of manner. And that's my way of expression. But what I feel is, and I think I agree with you on what you've just said, but what I feel is that, you know, yes, we can't avoid expression, but a lot of us do avoid it because we're afraid to have that vulnerability, afraid to have that exposure or risk or uncertainty appear.
And judgment.
So we sort of block really that authentic expression. And I don't know if... I understand exactly what you say, but I really feel that a lot of people avoid their real authentic expression because they don't want judgment. They don't want to be vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it takes a lot of effort, as you said, a lot of courage to expose yourself to something like this. Yeah.
So is that something that you've come across in your work? Like, have you, in doing what you do, had that sort of anxiety or fear or anything like that? Or did you just go on full out and said, this is what I do, this is what I produce?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, my God. No, I was, I still am riddled with anxiety, like any neurotic artist is contractually obliged.
So how do you manage that? How do you deal with that in your world?
Well, at some point I kind of woke up and I looked at something I'd done and I think, oh, that's fine. So I think, yeah, it kind of happened almost overnight and I felt quite a bit more confident. But it's not a sort of macho, made-up confidence or anything like that. It wasn't self-delusion. I think it's just that I was doing it for long enough and I did get much better.
So time and practice sort of naturally helped you build your confidence.
So,
yeah,
so it's
sense.
Like very hard-earned confidence that took a long time and a lot of suffering. And, you know, like right now I have a student who just asks me about this all the time, and she's really talented and sweet. And she asks me, well, when will I stop hating what I'm doing? And
that sounds so harsh.
And, you know, and I tell her, just trust me, it will happen. But I cannot tell you when.
I guess it's, yeah, different for
I mean,
everyone.
The hard thing is to not stop and not to give in to these impulses that tell you that what you're doing is worthless and has no place in the world and you just need to stop, you know. So the really difficult thing is to not block this voice, but to kind of acknowledge it and to understand that, well, yeah, you probably hate it because it's not up to your standards and you have high standards, and that's good. But you shouldn't stop because of that, because, you know, that's how we all are in the beginning. And I think it's actually more alarming if you don't have any of that anxiety at all and you just love everything you do. You know, then you do need to be really critical of yourself. But of course, the real difficulty is to be critical but not self-hating.
Yeah.
And that's something I certainly did struggle with quite a lot.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, there's a few risks that seem to come to me. One is that that anxiety or fear might cause you not to start at all and not to really express yourself. The other one is that you start and then you don't sustain it because you just can't build up that process of confidence. And the other one is that you're producing great work, but you're just not letting anyone see it. You're not sharing it. And that's not necessarily a bad thing if you don't want to share it. But I think there's a lot of great talent out there that perhaps aren't sharing and they should be sharing. And it puts them off from really progressing and moving on to the next piece of art and the next, you know, skill set, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I do know several people who I consider to be very talented who do have that an excess of modesty or lack of confidence that precludes them from kind of exposing themselves to the world. And yeah, it is a risk. And then people can be mean and maybe can say unpleasant things to you.
How do you deal with that? Like when you... Because I think that's part of the process of building your confidence.
I kind of love it, to be honest.
you get it. Yeah, I sort of...
Well, I grew up in Russia, which is a pretty brutal place.
Right. Okay.
So in a way, for me, it was a little difficult to adjust to America, where everyone is usually nice to you. And in a way, you know, that's kind of this whole slightly enforced politeness. As opposed to the Russian way of dealing where people just go unfiltered and they can be really brutal to each other, which is also uncalled for. But, you know, so I have a pretty thick skin, I think. And certainly I would be lying if I said that you know, criticism doesn't affect me at all.
Yeah.
I would say that a kind of constructive criticism is great, and I've always been very receptive. So, like my personal books that are the novels that are a little more experimental, and where I don't really try to please anyone other than myself.
Yeah.
They have been often criticized for being sort of too difficult and convoluted, and I take this criticism and I actually agree with quite a lot of it, and I would try to sort of work things out. And I'm very grateful for people who also have the courage to speak out like that, you know, because it's much easier to write a good review and just be friends with everyone.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, it is a bit of courage to kind of criticize someone in a way that's not just, you know, mean, but has that at least an intention of maybe starting a discussion or improving the general state of art and the critical communication and whatnot.
Yeah.
As for just pure meanness, well, you know, I think it's kind of like heartbreaks. So the more you have them, the less you react.
Yeah.
Up to a point.
Just an experience you build up.
So
that,
like,
that
I mean, the first time you fall in love and it doesn't work out, it's the most dramatic thing that can happen, right? And then it gets a little easier and so forth. So yeah, it's just kind of building that resilience and exposing yourself and, yeah, probably suffering quite a bit.
Okay. And I guess, yeah, in time you build up that awareness of what's meaningful feedback and perhaps even awareness to just disconnect from the feedback and disattach any I guess, emotional connection or direct connection to you and the feedback rather than your work and the feedback.
Yeah, and then all think of all the amazing artists, some of whom grew to be classics of their field and genre, who died penniless or who were completely forgotten or ignored by their contemporaries.
Yeah.
So, you know, they still kept going. And that is a question that I often ask myself. You know, if you take someone like Daniil Harms, with whom I started the book, you know, he wrote in one of his notebooks, "Today I wrote nothing. Doesn't matter." And I sort of examined that question or that statement. So what does it mean? What, it doesn't matter that he wrote nothing, or is it that whole nothingness that he wrote that doesn't matter? And that question kind of stays through the entire book, as it sees it almost. And throughout his career, which was very short, and he died very young, he only published 2 poems. And the rest of his work was kind of short stories for children's magazines that he didn't... I mean, they were good, but they were not his favorite work, as far as I understand. So the whole body of his adult work survived pretty much miraculously because it was rescued by one of his friends and eventually made it to print posthumously. Mm. But he kept writing all that. You know, he knew he had rejection after rejection, and it was in Soviet Russia, so, you know, people weren't particularly receptive to avant-garde poetry, at least, you know, the people above. Yeah. So, but he still kept doing it. And to me, that's the most inspiring kind of example, you know, as opposed to someone who succeeds and gets awards and gets paid for that stuff. That sort of makes sense that you would continue. Mm. But for people to continue against all odds, you know, that's when you can tell that there's a real passion, a real love of art. And I think that's a rare and beautiful thing that should be cultivated.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, you know, personally, who cares what comes from your work? If you love your art, if you love what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
and you get to the end of the life and you haven't made this great success or impact in the world, or even to a minor level, you know, won awards and achievements, mm-hmm. if you've enjoyed the process of that creativity, I think there's a lot of benefits to expression and creativity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so why not? But let's just move on there. And
mm-hmm.
I just want to ask you the question, because I do believe that expression and creativity is a fundamental part of our human nature and perhaps animal nature as well, even cats. But what are the benefits in your mind? Like, I've got a few ideas of what I consider the benefits of really expressing ourselves as, you know, personally living a fulfilled life, etc. But what do you mm-hmm. see as the benefits of, you know, expressing yourself and being creative? What does it give
well,
you?
Well, it's my career, I guess. So
it gives you a lifestyle. And,
I don't have I don't have to have a day job, though. That's very nice.
yeah.
Well, I mean, yes and no, because, of course, a lot of my commercial work is not really self-expression. It's rather... I mean, I enjoy doing it. I have no qualms about it. But I do understand that it's work for someone else. I am kind of selling my style in order to accompany an article or a work of fiction or to sell a book or something like that. So I do have the full awareness of the purpose of my book or my work.
Yeah, you're producing something, you're getting paid for it, and perhaps it's not exactly what you produce, but it still is your expression, yeah? Because as you said earlier, it's...
In a way.
You're making it.
Right. Well, it's my hands making it, so I don't know what they're doing. but then, as it comes to my own books, so there's no reason why they should exist, because I get paid very little for them, and sometimes nothing, and it's just for the sake of doing it. I think I do like sharing my work, and there I do write and draw a lot that doesn't go absolutely anywhere, and I have just notebooks filled with writing that I don't show anyone, and they're just for the sake of writing.
That whole process, sorry, I'm interrupting, but that whole process of just writing, whether it's work that's seen or whether it's just work that you're doing because you enjoy the process of that art,
mm-hmm.
well, how does that make you feel? What does that give you in life? Why do you do it?
Right. So my firm conviction is that people do have that need to do that sort of thing for no reason. And the question I would ask is, why do we talk to ourselves? Because we do. And very often when we talk to ourselves or have these monologues in our head, they're not really for any purpose. So we may think, oh, what am I going to have for lunch? But very often it's just this monologue that goes on.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is our desire to, voice our thoughts and just make this word manifest in one way or another, whether it's silent thought or writing on the wall or writing on a piece of paper or whatever. And I think it is a need.
But it's a need that you suggest that perhaps has no reason.
Yeah.
How is that a need?
Well, if we do it and we don't have to, that kind of qualifies it as a need. And to me, the kind of distinction between commercial art and personal art is the latter is something you do then that you don't need to do.
But a need so it doesn't matter has a reason, what it doesn't is. It? I would have thought need has a reason.
Well, I don't know.
Like I'm hungry, so I need food. There's a reason why I'm going after food, to fill that hunger.
Well, okay. Well, I don't really know what is the need for me to write words on paper. I just have them formed in my head, and they need to get out of there.
Yeah. So I don't know the answer either, that's why I wanted to explore.
Well, it's a very mysterious process, you know.
I sort of feel that it links to just trying to create meaning of your life.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I'm maybe not quite as convinced of that. I see the artistic process as something that's very chaotic and that's something that's a little beyond our understanding and comprehension, because the sum of our experiences and the stuff that happens in our head and that voice track that goes on, it's much more complicated than what we have in our conscious thought to process it.
So if you stopped doing your writing, if you stopped everything in relation to your art process, your creative process, would you still be okay? Would you feel...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You wouldn't have any sort of... What do you call it?
No, I only... Well, you know, I wrote this book because I am a great idler, and I spend a tremendous amount of time doing nothing, walking around, wasting time. And people always go on about me being quite productive and prolific and whatnot, and they ask me, well, how do you manage it if you waste time so much? And I wanted to sort of to show that, yeah, it is completely possible, and you just need to kind of allow yourself that space, because if you walk around for a few hours doing nothing and you allow yourself that pleasure and that time, then you're going to come back and maybe these words and these images will just appear seemingly out of nowhere. But of course not out of nowhere, because you gave them that room to breathe. While if you sit at your desk just beating your head against the wall and trying to come up with the perfect sentence, it can be actually counterproductive, because you're not allowing that space to exist where ideas form through the mechanisms that we don't necessarily fully understand.
See, for me, I feel if I don't write, if I don't just express myself as I do, I really feel like there'd be something missing from my life, and I feel like I'd have a lesser sense of joy in my life. It really is a process that I find great joy in, and it
actually relieves me a lot of my suffering
as well, just by trying to figure things out and make sense of things. And so that's why I sort of feel there is reason for creative process and expression.
Yeah, I think as long as you can justify it for yourself, that's good enough. And
I was just saying, always trying to look for the commonalities, and whether, because that's just my perspective, and that's why I like to speak to people like yourself who are obviously in this field of creative expression, to see why it's important. Because I believe it's important for everyone, but that's just an assumption. So by interviewing you and speaking to other people about it, and seeing why they feel it's important, perhaps it becomes then less of an assumption of my own, to more of something that, everyone could benefit from, a creative, expressive process.
Yeah, well, I've myself been kind of always fascinated by people who choose not to do something. It's this an idea of like Melville's Bartleby, who just says, "I would prefer not to." And to me, I think the person I would kind of admire in a general abstract sense would be someone who kind of doesn't do anything and still remains happy.
Yeah.
Because that seems to be such a difficult thing to do, you know.
Especially in this day.
It's big. Right, happy. Right.
Yeah, we're more so and more distracted, aren't we?
Yeah, so I don't really know how that happens, and I don't think I've met anyone who's perfectly happy doing nothing. But it's like this intangible, strange ideal that I aspire to, and I know that I'll probably never get there. But in the process of trying to get there, I might come up with some other things that may be satisfying in the meantime.
Interesting thought to reflect on. Let's just talk about idleness for a second and why that's important to have that silence, have that idleness, as far as really allowing us to, I guess, connect with that creative process.
Have that what? Sorry, I didn't catch it.
The idleness and silence.
The idleness, yes. Mm-hmm.
And doing nothing, like as your book describes, mm-hmm. on doing nothing. So talk to us about on doing nothing. Maybe you've got some thoughts around why that's so important for the creative process and maybe some tips and practices that might help us do nothing. Because I really agree with you. I think I've read it in your book blurb that, you know, we're so consumed by being productive and busy in this day and age that we have difficulty slowing down. And I'm guilty of that. I always like to be doing stuff. I find it really mm-hmm. challenging to just sit and be still and be silent. And meditation has really helped me. Certainly, I can get a good movie and sit in front of that and watch a movie. But even then, I can be distracted easily enough and get up and have to, you know, move around. So it's important for me too. So I'll just, let's start with that. And How can we become more idle?
Well, you'll have to buy the book for that. But
yeah, absolutely. Sticking right, the links right. in the show notes too for the listeners out there. So check it out.
No, I'm just kidding. Well, yes, it is a difficult question. And if there was a way to answer it in one sentence, I wouldn't have bothered writing a whole book on the matter. And I think it is a question that everyone has to answer individually.
Yep.
And I absolutely agree with you that it is a struggle, I think, for every single one of us.
Yep.
I mean, I am as guilty as everyone else of being distracted. And as much as I said I love reading, just like recently I was having a pretty hard time focusing on a single paragraph. And I was instead thinking about, you know, checking the email and all that business. So my point would be for probably every single listener who is now relating to that concern that I think almost all of us share nowadays.
Yeah.
If you don't, you know, I'm very jealous. Let me know how you manage it. I think the way to deal with it is to stop thinking of it as a kind of bad habit or as a trait or anything like that, and to start thinking about it almost as part of work.
Hmm. You know?
So we often think of this dichotomy between work, say sitting down and writing a sentence or drawing a picture or whatever, and then the opposite of that would be taking a walk, meditating, or reading. So let's take reading, for example. There's no reason why reading should be an idle activity. It is difficult, and it takes a lot of effort.
Hmm.
So once you kind of acknowledge and accept that, you can stop thinking of it as you failing to enjoy the pastime.
Yeah.
You know, going to a concert and listening to music is also work. I think basically the consumption of information, which, you know, sounds very cold, but there's no nicer way of putting it, whether it's a piece of art or just your environment, I think, first of all, it is at least as important as the creation. And secondly, it requires as much effort. So, you know, there you can never find a good writer who is not a good reader. It's impossible. And so I think kind of relaxing that attitude, and when we sit down with a book and we can't focus, we should just tell ourselves, well, you know, it is work. And therefore, when I sit down to make something good and it doesn't happen, you usually go, well, I should try harder, right? You don't go, well, why doesn't this happen on its own? So in a way, kind of, it's more of an adjustment of attitude rather than any specific techniques or anything.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it comes to the same attitude. It extends to the way you do it. So if you want to get better at push-ups, you don't just expect this to happen. You have to do it quite a lot, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So in the same way you read and you can't focus, well, you don't just say, I guess I'm a bad reader. You simply have to sit down and give yourself that time to do it all the time, you know? And then it comes to individuality. So for some people, it might be helpful to say, give yourself a specific time. And you say, all right, 8 p.m. is my reading hour, if that's what you want to do. Or walking hour, or I don't know, whatever, meditating hour.
Yeah.
And then you just put your phone aside and you kind of treat it like work. And then you do it again and again and again, and it gets easier. And suddenly it stops being work and it becomes second nature.
Yeah.
And for some people, like me, for instance, it's actually not that great to schedule things at all, because I kind of thrive in more anarchic and chaotic scenarios.
Right.
So for me, it's much easier to just carry a book around and read a few things when I feel that, when I feel my brain attuned. And I think that's another point that I try to make in the book, is that one of the most difficult things is to understand yourself and what you want. And that also takes a lot of effort. And so we should also kind of try to listen and to see what the brain asks of us, instead of trying to kind of beat it into submission.
Yeah.
So very often you would see books like that, kind of self-helpy books full of very direct tips on sort of, well, why don't you do this or that? And I think it's a little almost patronizing to me, you know, because we're all so vastly different.
Yeah.
And to think that just creating a schedule will somehow solve these problems is just unreal. We have to approach it as work.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you mentioned meditation, and I think that's actually a great example, because I meditate too. And for me, it was extremely difficult when I started, to the point that I would just get absolutely infuriated, you know.
And I thought, how long have you been meditating for?
I think 2 years.
Okay.
So I'm pretty fresh to that. but it absolutely changed my life, and it made it so much easier to go along with. But it was very hard to start. Why? Because, well, I never sat down to do nothing for 20 or 30 minutes. It just didn't feel right. It felt like I'm wasting my time. And I got really anxious.
Do you feel guilty? Then, do you feel guilty in that process, idleness?
I think that's a big reason for guilt anyway. It's like my, family trait. We all feel guilty about everything. But yeah, absolutely. So then I would just kind of treat it almost like a medical necessity, you know?
Yeah.
Again, it's like kind of fooling your brain and telling you, oh, you know what? You have to do it. It's not a choice anymore. And I treat my little exercise in the morning the same way. I go, well, you don't really have a choice between stretching and not stretching. This is just something that you have to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, when you do it in this kind of militant fashion, after a while, it stops being that, and it becomes easy.
Yeah.
So with meditation, I just kind of sat down, and I would do it for half an hour, and it was horrible. I would do it again, and again, and again, next day, next day. And I think half a year or a year later, it became so natural that I can't imagine not doing it in a day, you know? And I look forward to it, and it becomes like an essential part of my daily life.
Yeah, absolutely. So
it completely changes.
And it's a really, I believe it's a powerful and strong process to just finding that ability to move into silence more often throughout the day. So you just give yourself 10 minutes or half an hour or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
Of that meditation practice, and that sort of brings that ease of being silent, being comfortable with silence.
Yeah.
And avoiding
exactly.
distraction.
Exactly. It's training. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
and also it's a...
I was just going to say, I've been doing it for a few years now and I still mm-hmm. don't find it... I find it easy to get into the routine and do it ritualistically, mm-hmm. but I find it still quite difficult to sit there in the silence, if that makes sense. But
absolutely. Well, I also see it not just a health thing, which it certainly is, but also as an exercising faith in yourself. I don't really like myself, to be honest. You know, I'm a very self-critical person, sometimes to a fault, and people always made fun of me for being kind of very hard on myself. I think it's just a trait that I will probably die with. But kind of giving yourself this chances to do that, to be exposed to all these things that irritate you about yourself, and doing it on a daily basis just makes it easier to deal with yourself on a, you know, in your daily routines. So then you don't sit drawing as I did early on, and then eventually some thought would creep in about something I said 10 years ago, you know, in the school playground or whatever. And then it starts going around in your head. So to me, meditation is kind of a way of getting this stuff out without ranting to other people and upsetting them.
Yeah. Someone said it to me really well yesterday in an interview, and he said it's the difference between being consumed in your thoughts and being consumed in the experience and being present. And when you meditate, you really, that's what you're doing. You're being in the experience, not in the thought. And that's what it does. So when you're getting those thoughts coming in that come up like randomly 10 years ago or back to my high school days and what he said to me that day or something like that, ridiculous things. It really gives us that ability to sort of go, okay, and let that thought pass and then move back to that experience. And the experience is where everything happens, I think, or where the joy lives anyway for me. But look, it sounds like a fantastic read. I'm taking up a lot of your time today, so I want to wrap it up there encourage the audience to pick up a copy. I'm going to stick a link in the show notes. So it's called On Doing Nothing, Find Inspiration in Idleness. So check out the link, guys. If you can support the show, The Hidden Why, use those links to Amazon. That would be great. And Roman, I've got a few other questions that I want to ask you. It's probably a quick round question, so take as much time as you need, but they're usually sort of one-sentence answers. So,
got it.
Let's go through with these. The first one is, what are your routines or rituals that you believe contribute to your success?
For me, I think waking up at the same time is really helpful.
Yeah.
Because it counteracts my very chaotic nature. So a little bit of routine, I think, is good.
Yeah, bit of discipline, good.
Mm-hmm.
What is your meaning of success?
What is my what?
Meaning of success.
I don't really believe in success, to be honest, at all. And I find it a completely arbitrary concept, as well as failure. So I think if there's anything I would say on that matter is to kind of try to get away from that concept as far as possible.
Okay, I like that answer. And that could be another episode, another day, to talk about that and explore that. But
another book.
That's a good answer. And that certainly gives me a lot to think about. The next question is, what advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
Oh, God. I don't think that could be one sentence. God, just get over yourself a bit. Be nice to people and be patient. It'll probably get better.
Yeah, okay. That's the advice I could give myself still. Be patient.
Yeah.
Good one. What do you have a one piece of productivity advice that you could share that you think helps you in being more productive and effective? I could answer this for you probably, but I won't.
Can you?
Well, I would have said if I was you, being idle, finding that space.
Yeah. Well, I was tempted to say that, but I thought, well, we have been talking about it for all that time. So, I was just thinking, is there anything else that I hadn't said? In terms of productivity, I think it's, I would really encourage people to try to do little work often rather than setting out this big chunk of day and just doing it at once, which works perfectly well for a lot of people. But I think many of us are kind of daunted by not having that luxury, right? Because we have jobs and whatnot. And I think if you have 10 minutes in a day to do what you want, that's actually a pretty decent amount of time if you really put your mind to it.
Yeah.
And like if you're, I always like the example of the Hungarian novelist Laszlo Krasznahorkai, who would have his day job at some factory and he would write sentences in his head and then he would come home and transcribe them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so people have managed to do this stuff under the most insane circumstances.
Hmm.
So I think, of course, everyone's different and I'm fairly privileged in my current position as a working artist and I'm very aware of that. So that's why, like in that book and other pieces of advice that I give, I always try to stress that you don't really need to have those huge stretches of time. It's if you write like two lines in the metro or whatever, that's still creativity. You're still doing it right. You know, you don't need that excess of freedom that most of us cannot afford.
Yeah, and I think that's good advice. And sometimes we put things off because we think, you know, 10 minutes isn't enough to do mm-hmm. that thing. And really, it is enough. You just got to get your mind around it and then and do it. It'll
yeah. make a difference. And again, and I am also guilty of that. And I'm still working on it. Very often I would put things off because I feel, oh, well, there's not enough time for that. Mm-hmm. And I do know that it's an excuse. So, you know, I'm not some kind of source of wisdom on that matter.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm working through these issues as much as everyone else.
But that's the thing. You're working through it, so that's what's important.
Yeah.
You're aware and yeah, aware of it. The last question there I have for you is: if someone's looking to make some change in their life, what advice could you give them, or would you give them?
Well, I don't know. What changes do they want, or
any change?
What is their life?
They're just looking to make
anything
change. Yeah.
That's a little too vague. God. I would say just try to appreciate the everyday a little bit more. I think that's kind of a problem that many people I meet have, that they would go through their lives sort of ignoring stuff that's right there because they're kind of accustomed by our culture to seek something exciting. Mm. You know, the idea of going on a trip and that's when you experience life. But no, you actually experience it just as much when you eat your cereal every day, and it's more about kind of changing your attitude and appreciating all these little joys. And I'm like, I smile a lot, and even though I kind of have a slightly morose personality, and people sort of always ask me about it, but you know, I'm actually genuinely kind of really happy to just be alive and be able to talk a language that gives me so much pleasure. I think kind of reminding yourself of this little joys is really what life is all about for me.
Well, and yeah, I heard something recently about, you know, it's just a story of death, and people that go through that near-death experience sort of talk about the things they miss the most isn't, you know, the vacation or whatever. It's really those small things, you know, the waking up and eating that bowl of cereal that you know, you love and things like that. So yeah, really good advice. Couple of quick round questions. What's your favorite food?
Oh, God, so much. Well, okay, if I were about to die and someone asked me, I think I would have a bowl of ramen.
Ramen. I'm in the country for it, mate. Good stuff.
Yeah, I'm very jealous. Never been.
What's your favorite leisure activity?
Walking, definitely.
And, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a...
I'm a really dedicated walker, and for me, it's just so much fun.
Hmm.
And I feel so privileged to be able to just walk freely. And early in my life, I had a kind of health issue which gave me a lot of fatigue, and I couldn't do it, and that made me appreciate just this freedom to walk down the road. It's actually pretty incredible. Yeah. And many of us don't have that, so should use it up while we can.
Be grateful for it, yeah. What is your favorite book, or do you have a book that you'd like to recommend for the audience to read?
Oh, God. Again, this could stretch for hours. I would say Life a User's Manual by Georges Perec, whom I had mentioned. If I can think of one book that summarizes all of my obsessions, it's probably that one. Okay. Like, it's a very encyclopedic, it's a long, dense book that's written in a ton of styles. And
sounds like one I should read. I'll stick it in the show notes. so everyone out there listening, you can pick up a copy. Again, using those links would help the support the show.
Yeah,
I'll stick I'll stick your book in there as well, Roman, so they can get a copy of that as well. Do you have a favorite?
Yeah, mine is shorter.
Do you have a favorite quote?
Well, again, I have many. I don't know if I can pick one off my head. I guess Kafka comes to mind, and maybe Robert Walzer, whom I've been rereading lately. He has a line at the end of one of his stories, something like, "We don't need to see anything out of the ordinary. We already see so much," which seems to stick to the point I was making earlier.
We don't need to see anything out of the ordinary. We already see so much. That's who? Yep. Robert Walzer.
Walzer.
Okay, cool. Do you believe we all have a why, a purpose?
A what purpose?
A why or a purpose?
Oh, why? No, I think life is entirely meaningless. We're just, you know, enjoying our decay as much as we can.
Okay, and what does living life with passion and purpose mean to you?
I'm just getting through the day with as little suffering as possible and trying to be kind to others and improve their life if you can.
And the final question, what's the underlying motivation, if you reflect on it quickly, which is hard, what is the underlying motivation behind everything you do?
I guess it's trying to communicate something that doesn't work any other way, that cannot be summed in a little sentence in an interview, you know, like the necessity to do a novel instead of simply writing a thought. It means that that can only be communicated in such an abstruse and strange form. And I think knowing that you have to do it is good enough for me.
Yeah, okay. Mate, been a fantastic chat. I appreciate your time once again for coming on the show and accepting my invite.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoyed it. It was a good time.
How can people best find you and reach you? Is it just your website?
Oh, yes. My website, you can find me at bluebed.net. It's blue as in color blue and bed as in bed where you sleep. And you can find me on Instagram, Roman_M, and you can just Google my name if you like, or go to a bookstore and ask for me.
Okay, cool. Mate, been a pleasure. Thank you once again, guys. Check it all out at thehiddenwhy.com. All the links, etc., will be in the show notes there for this episode. Roman, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
See you again, guys. Peace, passion, and purpose. There you go, guys, my interview with Roman Muradov. What did you think? Let me know. Jump onto thehiddenwhy.com, episode 534, and let us know your thoughts. You can leave your comments in the comments field, or you can reach us directly. Also, thank Roman for coming on the show. Check out his work, his website, and his book. All the links will be left in the show notes there as well, so if you want to pick up a copy of his book, please help support the show by using the Amazon links. You can actually do all your Amazon shopping using that link, and that certainly does help support the show. Guys, I'd love to hear what you think about The Hidden Why. If you've got any suggestions, recommendations for the show, please connect. And also, guys, as you know, if you've been listening to this episode, these episodes for a while, I have a book coming out at some point called The Ultimate Life Map. So no set date as I record this, but it will be out soon, and I do have a website already up in place. So it's called theultimatelifemap.com. You can jump on there, have a read about what it's all about, and if you like, and if you're interested in getting a copy when it does get published, if it hasn't already been published, just put in your email address there, and that way you can stay informed with the process there. Other than that, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you're having a wonderful day, and you know what to do. You need to go out there, breathe more passion into every single moment. Do everything with greater purpose, and in doing so, you'll discover your hidden why. This is The Hidden Why. My name is Levi Nutzi, signing out.